Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we want to welcome you to the show. Somebody needs to mute their phone. I'm going to see if I can mute them. Okay. Today is December the 26th, Thursday. It's the year 2013, and I hope everybody had an awesome Christmas, wonderful New Year coming up. And our calling number is 646-200. 4169, press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome.
Delighted. Thank you, dear heart. It's an honor and a privilege to be with you today as we close down, wind down 2013. It's been a fast year. And get ready for 2014, which looks like it's going to be quite an interesting time on planet Earth. There's certainly lots happening in the world, and one of the major things that's happening from our point of view is the way that the work is expanding on a global level. We're so appreciative of everybody who's taken a hold and said, I'm going to get on the team and help to make this happen. So it's our delight to share this time with you and to have you with us today. Our work, of course, is the work of forgiveness, and I reinforce every show we do the idea of forgiveness because we've been so brainwashed with an opposite idea. The exact backward idea of forgiveness rules and governs the whole concept of forgiveness on a planet-wide level. Just about every book you pick up, you'll hear people talking about how to forgive them, how to forgive yourself. And we're going to offer the warning, never forgive yourself, never forgive anyone for anything. Properly defined, to let someone else off the hook or let yourself off the hook for something that you've done is called pardoning. However, if you put the errant definition, forgiveness, on that act of letting yourself or another off the hook, then, of course, the next step of doing actual forgiveness work will not be done. I oftentimes will hear people who tell me about how they hear I'm doing this workshop on forgiveness. Why is this happening to me again? And I say, well, you know, I don't have to do that because I've already forgiven everybody, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my kids, my parents, myself. I've forgiven everybody. And what I know, if that's the language that one uses about forgiveness, is that that person has done zero forgiveness to date, absolutely none. Because forgiveness is not about how I let you off the hook for the pain that's inside of me. It's not about how I let myself off the hook for the pain that's inside of me. Forgiveness is the act of going inside of yourself and removing the pain that never belonged. And so our work together is that of learning, understanding, and integrating forgiveness into our lives and into the world. One of the reasons why forgiveness isn't very popular is because in order to actually move through to a true state of human beingness, you have to face and forgive everything in you that is unlike your human beingness. And we have an easy experiential definition of a human life. Hold a newborn child. That awesome active presence of love that you experience when you hold a newborn is human life. Anything less than that is a fit subject for forgiveness. If your physiology can still produce hostility, fear, grief, rage, or pain in any of its myriad of forms, any of its appearances, then you, if you choose to heal, must face and forgive those dynamics in yourself. It leads to what Dr. Tim calls, the ancients call it the dark night of the soul, but I love Dr. Tim's refinement where he says it is the dark night of the ego, the dark night of the non-being mind, because as it begins to crumble, as the fear and hostility-based self begins to crumble, it will go through all kinds of gyrations to hold on and to pretend that it's got to rule the game, that without hostility, without fear, you'll be in big, big trouble. When the truth is, it is hostility and fear that create all of the trouble that we're in as non-humans. And when I say non-humans, I select those words very carefully. If one is not functioning with and as this awesome active presence of love, they're not human. You only have human life where there is this presence of love, because that is human life. Human life doesn't come from a human so-called body. That's not human. That's just a form. That's just a medium of expression. You know, you can have a $10 transistor radio, or you can have a $100,000 stereo system. The stereo system and the $10 transistor simply reflect what is back of and superior to it. You know, to think that the body sources anything is to say that the transistor radio wrote the Mozart concerto. You know, all it does is portray itself or bring into expression what is coming through it. Our form brings into expression what is coming through it, and if it's human, then it is the presence of love. If it is hostility or fear, then it's not human. And oftentimes, the non-humanness that we carry within our form takes over, eradicates the truth of who we are, and creates an expression based in hostility or fear. Anyone and everyone who chooses to pick up, you know, you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and his teaching was not religious. It's just this is how it works. And he says that you had to pick up your cross. You'll notice he didn't say pick up my cross. He had his own cross to bear. Everybody has a cross to bear. And if you pick it up, and if you face it and look it square in the eye from the presence of love, whatever the hostility, the fear, the grief, the rage, the pain, the drama, and the trauma is, it will begin to dissolve. The work of Yeshua was to show us how to dissolve it, not create a pity party for someone who was lost in their pain or their trauma, not to buy into sacrifice, but rather to recognize, when you listen to Yeshua, he says, my father doesn't want your sacrifices. And yet their whole system's based on that thought. Let's listen to the man. No sacrifice. Live a human life. He says that we need to take up our cross. We need to take up the hostility and fear-based self and begin its dissolution, and that's done through forgiveness. If that's a new conversation for you, or it sounds appealing and you're ready to go for it, then we invite you to go to our website. And there are hundreds of hours of material free there to support you in learning that. And, of course, we're here 5 days a week to have a personal conversation and do our best to help to refine both our understanding of the principles and your understanding of the principles and the application of those principles. And so www.whyagain.org is our website. And if you go to the upper left-hand corner or click on the bullseye in the middle of the page, that'll take you to a list of links. It'll start out and give you chapter 24 of my book. The second link is the actual worksheet itself. And then there are at least 6 radio shows where we walk somebody through the whole forgiveness process. We invite you to go to those links, put it to work in your life, and watch what happens. It's pretty awesome. And so, Jean, do we have Dr. Tim with us today?
Dr. Tim is not with us, and everything's quiet. There's nobody in the chat room this morning, and we have about 10 callers, but nobody has their hand up. So if somebody presses one, you're next in line without waiting. But no, Dr. Tim is not with us today. I guess everybody's still doing their Christmas thing.
Well, that's understandable. And how about Michelle? Is Michelle there? If you're there, let's say hello and see how Michelle's doing today. She's got anything to share with us.
Say that again. I didn't catch it.
I was just asking if Michelle was there to say hello to her and see if she had anything to share.
She had been on earlier, actually. She is who I muted, and then shortly after I muted, she disappeared off the switchboard, so I'm assuming that means that she's, like, somewhere, like maybe in a store or gas station
right.
or somewhere. So she's probably not where she can talk right now, but she is not on there either.
All right, very cool.
So maybe tell everybody about the intensive in Costa Rica.
Sure, we can do that. Let's tell everybody about the intensive in Costa Rica and tell everybody the project in Costa Rica. Jeannie and I just went down there recently and had an awesome visit, first time to Costa Rica. It's a pretty amazing country. It's a place that in 1948 outlawed the military, and their military budget is used to create health care, sanitation, and education. What a radical idea on planet Earth that instead of spending millions of dollars in weapons and destruction, here's a country that's actually using that budget. They do have a military budget, but in 1948, the military was outlawed. And they used that budget to create well-being in their country and for their people. Oh, could we learn a lesson from that one? How many billions and billions of dollars could bring the standard of living for everyone in this culture up? We're blowing the money anyway. Well, what would you do with all those military people? Well, let's put them to work on constructive projects. You know, there's a little old lady down the street that can't take care of her house. What if every day somebody from the what used to be the military went in and helped her to fix up her house and helped her to do her grocery shopping and supported her trips to the doctor? What if we took all those people and gave them jobs that created something useful in the world, created something beneficial for the population, and something beneficial for the world? Do you think if we were going into countries and offering them true support, feet on the ground, let's put these feet on the ground and go help the old folks. Let's go help the children. Let's go help the healthcare providers. And let's see how many enemies we have left. Guess what? They're going to dissolve. They're going to disappear. But, you know, the people who are making billions don't really have any interest in that whatsoever when they can rake the money out of people's pockets and put it in their own. It's time for a wake-up call. Let's follow Costa Rica's lead. Let's eliminate the military. Let's make it illegal. Oh, but then we'd be overrun. Well, you know, it's interesting. Go back and do a little reading of the history in Costa Rica. That's what they said. You know, it's right down there with all those banana republics. War is going on all the time. Just, you know, horrendous stuff going on. Actually, it's interesting. The only country in the world that's ever been sanctioned for illegal activities in the country was when the United States invaded Nicaragua. We were told by the UN that we were going to be sanctioned for that. And we ignored them. Read the history, folks. And they said Costa Rica would be overrun. Guess what? Costa Rica hasn't been overrun. They've upgraded and upgraded the well-being of their population. What a radical idea. What if we woke up and did that? How different could the game be? Of course, it's going to take courage. We're going to have to face ourselves. We're going to have to face what's going on inside of us and start to clean up the violence that we've been trained is necessary in order to survive. Violence is not necessary in order for a true human being to survive. It's only necessary for the animals. We're not in the food chain. We're not in the food chain unless we're in our viciousness and our violence, and we want to devour others' lives. And, of course, when we do that, we set up the energy for ourselves to be devoured. Let's make a shift. And so 49% of the country in Costa Rica is set up for permanent preserves. Over 90% of the power comes from solar and wind power. And they're aiming for 100%. the teachings about sustainability. It's pretty awesome to
there.
Go ahead, Jeannie.
I didn't mean to hit that.
Oh, okay. So anyway, just a couple of things, and I think Jeannie's got some hands up, so we'll go to our callers. But the 21st of February, we're planning to start a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive in Costa Rica. So we've got this beautiful place called Rico Ranch, and it overlooks the ocean. Absolutely beautiful space, really nice accommodations, a really fabulous covered outdoor meeting area that is just absolutely beautiful. And so we're going to be doing a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive. And, you know, flights down there, we've checked a few places. I know that flights out of Detroit, Michelle was telling us, were, I think she said around 340 or 390 return. And out of Atlanta, we're around 220 or 280 return. Out of Florida, we're 220. So, you know, come and join us. Think about doing that intensive. It'll be a nice time to get away mid-February from that winter stuff that'll be happening in the north. And unfortunately, further and further south. I know we were in North Florida last week, and it was down into the 30s. So anyway, that's what we'll be doing, and we're also working on creating a center in Costa Rica, and we'll be telling you more about that, a place that will be a jump-off for the work on a whole new level. It's going to take things to a new level with the work. So Jeannie, you've got a hand up for us. Let's say hello to our caller.
All right. We have area code 970. You are on the air. Who do we have, and where are you calling from?
This is Cindy again in Southwest Colorado.
Hey, young lady, welcome.
Thank you. I have a question about the book that you have on your website called Bible in Translation. You don't have a lot of books on your website, so this must be a very, you must consider this a very significant book to actually carry it. And I know you've mentioned just very few things about it, which is why Brad and I went ahead and ordered it. Before I ask my big question, Jeannie, you sent me an email asking if we had received it. My email got lost in the mail, apparently. You've sent us two copies, so I will be returning. I will be returning the second copy this week. But,
that's fine.
Okay. My question is, could you... Let me get away from my doggy. Could you, Michael, just elaborate a little bit about why you have this book on your website and what the value it carries as far as your work goes? How does it relate to your work? We haven't even started reading it. I'm just asking this because I'm curious.
Cool. Well, one of my thoughts is maybe there'd be somebody out there who'd be interested in buying that copy from you. You could just make it a second one because it's such a big book and expensive to ship. But that's just a thought. But the reason why we carry it, actually, I was in at Unity Village back about 15 years ago keynoting at a healing symposium. And there was a young man that came up to me during that symposium and handed me a manuscript that he was working on. It was called The Bible for Translation. He asked me if I'd like to read it. So I received it from him and actually proceeded to spend almost a week with it while I was there in that conference. And I spent most of my days reading and spending time with that book. First of all, it's got nothing to do with the Bible, although there are Bible quotes in it. And it's got nothing to do with translating languages. The word translation is a word that represents stepping up the frequency of your form from the physical, so-called physical, to the non-physical. You know, one of the bases of our work is recognizing that we don't have a physical world. We have a world based in energy, and that as human beings, we have the ability to do things with energy and to change things in a way that, you know, kings don't really want us to know we've got that kind of power. And so what that book is about, it's written in the first person of someone who's actually translated, who's speaking from the point of view of, here's what I did. Here's how I stepped up my frequency. And then it goes through just a whole series of high-level exercises and thoughts for achieving living your life as a true human being. And the reason I carry it, we carry it on our tape table, we have it on our website, is that in my experience, one of the tools we teach is a mind goal management sheet. And what we suggest that people do when they start to use that mind goal management sheet is every day, first thing in the morning, they spend 5 minutes reading something that takes them into a mind higher than the mind they usually live in. And last thing at night, spend 5 minutes reading something that takes them into a series of thoughts that are higher than the thoughts they usually think. And so my experience is that this book is the best collection of God thoughts on the planet. You know, if you define God as love, it is the highest collection of high-level mind energy based in love that I have found. And so I carry it. I think it's a fabulous book. And it's one that you can sit and you can read sequentially, just read through the whole thing. Or, you know, it's one of those bedside books that last thing at night, first thing in the morning, open to whatever page you open to, and let that be the thing that helps to set your tone for the day, to set your tone for the sleep time that you're going to go into. And it's just an awesome book in that way. So, and we've had lots of people who've fed back that they really enjoy it and love it.
Perfect. What I'm hearing you say is that supports the work that the Why Again work, and that it's another tool to help us.
Exactly. So, it's another tool for staying on track. And, you know, if you find yourself getting into a hostile or fearful mindset, it can be another way to start to just guide your mind in a different direction. Well, let me see in the middle of my muddle right now what this has to say to me about what's going on in my life, if I'm in my hostility or fear, and just open it to a page and start to read. And what people have fed back to me is when they do that, it just keys them into, here's another place I could be going instead of the place my mind is diving to.
Very good. Well, that answers my question. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Blessings. Appreciate you. So our calling number is 646-200-4169. Jeannie, do you have another caller for us?
Well, I did have two other people with their hands up, and they disappeared, so I don't know if they're still on there. Hit one again, and that'll put you right back in queue. About the time you started talking, it was like three callers came in all at the exact same time, and then they just disappeared once you started talking, so I guess they chickened out. So press one, or call in 646-200-4169. And press 1. And we do have a hand up now. Area code 541. You're on the air. Who do we have and where are you calling from?
This is Julie.
541.
Hello, area code 541. You are on the air.
I had mute.
Now I'm good. I knew it was Julie. All right. Hey there, young lady. How are you? Happy New Year.
Thank you. Yeah, there's nothing mute about me unless I do it with technology. So, yeah,
I've never noticed
mute.
That.
I kept going in and out of the queue because I kept forgetting what I wanted to say, and I don't think that there was really anything except I love you, and I'm learning so much. And I think I'm going to express it right now that I'm learning by following your example, Michael, something I admire in you so much, and all of those who work with you, Jeannie and Dr. Tim and Julie Haverstick and Magda and Carrie and, I can't name everybody, Susan, forgive me, everyone, I'm not naming, Rex. I'm learning, and I observe it in everyone, that I'm getting more comfortable with being with the truth and being with the expressing of it. So I'm starting to get more congruent the words I hear coming out of my mouth are starting to be more congruent with what I'm doing in my worksheets. And it's not just programming. It is training new brain cells and removing ones that are unlike love. And as I'm doing that, I'm opening up to being more enabled, more capable to following the example that I admire so much in you, Michael, and that is that you are able to stand in the truth. You stand and presence and act and speak in the truth, you know, and you're not just speaking from a program, because the vulnerability is always there in the present moment that anything could come up, you know, that resonates and triggers you. But you just, you are so in truth about that, that it feels like you really are living in a whole new way. And I'm starting to feel that come into my life. And it just is, it's bringing me to tears right now. You know, it's just, and there's no word. I could say awesome, you know. I could say awesome, but it isn't. It's like almost humbling that it is so great to allow this truth to live in us and to be able to walk and breathe it. So I have a lot of gratitude for your willingness and dedication and devotion to standing and speaking and living and demonstrating this truth. And I'm doing it too, you know, and it's awesome to be in the experience of that. So I just guess that's what I wanted to say. I never know sometimes, but I'm taking up your radio stage.
Well, thank you for the acknowledgement, and that's certainly my goal. When we live in that, what we call the non-being mind, the game is to live in blockage of truth. You know, I have my story. I want to tell my story. I'm stuck in my story, and my story is about how somebody did it to me and how it's not my fault and how I'm in pain and how I'm in trauma and how they did it to me. And that's all based in the lie that I create something and then I hide what I create by blaming somebody else for it. And, of course, in this work, we define that as denial, the simple act of speaking as though something or someone outside of us is the cause of something happening inside of us, is the king of all lies, is the cause of all war, is the cause of all conflict. And when I'm willing to love the truth enough, and a long time ago, for me, it was a big aha moment, the discovery that, the antidote for blockage of truth is love of truth. When I love truth enough, then my mind is going to be able to start to show me things that otherwise it could never show me, that would remain totally blocked. There's an interesting experiment that was done with cats where they took newborn kittens and they put them in an environment where there were only horizontal obstructions, no vertical obstructions. And they left those cats, I believe it was for about 8 weeks, in that environment with all of the horizontal obstructions. Now you think, well, you see things, and so you see them whatever they are. So they take these cats after, again, I believe it was 8 weeks, and they put them in an environment where there are vertical obstructions. And guess what? They can't see the vertical obstructions. They walk right into them. Now you think, wait a minute, that physical thing was there. Of course they'd be able to see them. No, they don't see them. They're just not visible. And when we live in a world where only certain things are allowed, you know, the only conversation that's allowed in this household is how, you know, Joe the neighbor is the problem and Harry the boss is the trouble in the world, and it's that woman down the block that's, you know, when the only conversation that's allowed is how it's all everybody else's fault, you know, when parents argue with each other and, you know, and the conversation's about, and you made me mad and you hurt me and you really are the problem in my life, then when one is invited into a world where they start to see that Harry the boss and, you know, the woman down the block and you didn't cause anything to happen to me, it's invisible at first. It literally can't be seen. Just like that cat that was taken from the environment with horizontal obstructions, couldn't see the vertical obstructions. The information is gated out another experiment done with cats where they have a cat that they hook its brain. They literally do a surgery and implant electrodes in its brain in the area where the cat hears sounds. And then they have a clicker, and they click this little device in the cat's ear. And when it clicks, that area of the brain fires, and they have it hooked to wires in an oscilloscope, and you see a blip on the screen of the oscilloscope. And every time you click, the oscilloscope pop, pop, pop. And then when a mouse in a bell jar is put in front of them, they can't get at the mouse, but there's the mouse right in front of them. All of a sudden, their attention focused on the mouse, and they can click that literal physical clicking device, which you think, well, this is just physical perception, isn't it? A thing clicks, the brain fires, but all of a sudden, when the mouse is there and the attention is shifted, the information about the click is totally gated out. There is no response in the oscilloscope anymore, no response in the brain. And we are very much like those critters that when we live in blockage of truth, the truth literally can't make an impression. Actually, there's a session I was thinking about doing, and we'll see how the calls go. And if we don't have calls, we'll talk about the gating mechanism of the mind and the way that the mind is like truck brakes. And so we'll maybe bring that into the conversation. But thank you for being willing to build some new brain cells to step into the arena of truth and responsibility and do your work. That's what changes the planet. Thank you. And we hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes. You too. Have a wonderful year ahead.
It's in the plan. Thanks for calling, Julie.
Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Blessings. Bye-bye. So, Jeannie, is there anything happening in the chat room, or do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up?
Nobody has their hand up, and it's just Michelle and I in the chat room. So she has come in later, but nobody on the switchboard has their hand up. So if somebody presses one, you have no waiting.
Hey, Michelle, if you're available, I'd love to say hello and see how you're doing today. Well, if there are no hands up, let's talk a little bit about how the human mind operates just like a set of truck brakes. And people think, well, that's a pretty strange analogy to use, but actually it's a very accurate analogy. You know, if you've got a truck, these over-the-road trucks, people say, well, you know, why does that trucker, when he complains about the price of gas, park his truck and go in and, you know, take a shower and have a nap and play ping pong for a while and watch a movie and leave his truck running all that time? Why doesn't he just shut it down and save the gas that he says is so expensive? And the reason for that is because the truck has a fail-safe braking mechanism, and that is that it uses a system that's called a double inhibitor. And the way a double inhibitor works is that when the truck is shut down, the brakes are always locked on the truck, so that if the truck, you know, has a problem and it's runaway, what happens is that there are very powerful springs that pull the brakes tight on the brake drum and lock the truck in place so it can't move. And so the brakes locked on all the time by these powerful springs are called an inhibitor. So the movement of the truck is inhibited by the springs pulling the brakes on and holding the brakes on all the time. So that's an inhibitor. When I say there's a double inhibitory system, what happens is that there is an anti-inhibitor. There's a second inhibitor that, and this starts to get a little strange in language, but you inhibit the inhibitor with air pressure. So what happens is when the truck runs, it creates a pump, or the pump runs and builds up air pressure. And when there's enough air pressure, then the air pressure inhibits the inhibitor. That is, the air pressure creates an anti-inhibitor that pulls back against the springs takes the brake off the drum, and the truck is able to move. If you want the truck, the brakes, to operate again, you hit the brake, and what that does is it drops the air pressure, and the inhibitor is no longer inhibited, if that makes sense. The springs pull down, and the brakes are applied. So that double inhibitory system means that the brakes inhibit the truck's movement, they're on all the time, and then by inhibiting, that is, moving against the inhibitor, that second inhibitor takes the springs back and the truck can move. Well, the brain works in exactly the same way. In excess of 90% of brain chemistry is used to inhibit the firing of brain cells. And so in order to allow brain cells to fire, there has to be an anti-inhibitor. There has to be something that inhibits the inhibitor. So let's use an example. We have a child, newborn, comes into the world as this awesome presence of love. And it experiences that love in a natural way for a human being. In every cell of its structure, it is enthusiasm, it is excitement, it is presence of love. It is just awesome what goes on in the physiology, in the mind, and in the emotions of the newborn child. There it is, that presence of love and that presence of contentment. Many people look at the newborn and go, you know, they look so contented. Yes, that's the natural state of a human being. And then along comes somebody who starts to give the child messages about how they're not good enough. They don't do it right. They're bad. I mean, some of the craziest messages that are forced into the child's mind, and what that happens in that case, when that occurs, the natural aliveness of the child is inhibited by those messages that say, you're bad, you're wrong, you're evil. You know, we were in a church in Florida a couple of years ago, and it was interesting. There were a group of young kids, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, that were being induced into this church. And the first thing that each child had to do in order to become part of that congregation, remember, this is a teaching of a man who says it's about love. The first thing they had to do was proclaim themselves as sinners. So what does that message do? It inhibits the natural state of the child and starts to turn its mind into something that it is not. And so once the active presence of love is inhibited in the child and the words that are used by the child are those in reference to self and the world around it, of how dangerous the world is and how somebody's out to get the child and how bad it is and how evil it is, all the crazy things that kids are told in this culture, then the truth about the child is inhibited. And if that pain, if that message of you're less than love is put in with trauma and physical threat and, you know, emotional threat and beatings, which unfortunately a lot of times are physical, you know, attack to the child, then the presence of love, the truth about the child is inhibited by the presence of those energies. And then if the child picks up on the language, you know, you listen, I think back to the world I was brought up in, and so often, and still today, after all the work I've done, still today, you know, circumstances happen and words come to mind, and it's like, why was I ever introduced to or taught those words? Why were those words ever even in my environment? And they're words of self-degradation. You know, you look at people in relationships and the words that they apply to themselves, to the people of the opposite sex, to body parts, to you know, relationship functions. You look at the kind of words that are used, and those words inhibit the natural beauty of a human life and relationship. And so as one starts to apply the tool of forgiveness, they remove those inhibitors, and then with those inhibitors removed, the natural's allowed to come through again. The natural's allowed to come into expression. And so on the journey to that state, starting to put in words, and you listen to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he says the power of life and death is in your words. That if you're using words based in hostility or fear, you're literally introducing chemistry that creates a degradation of the cell. You know, the cell biologists today are proving to us that when you think a thought, that thought produces a molecule called a neuropeptide. And that neuropeptide circulates around in the structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches, and it lands on the cell. And then the cell replicates the neuropeptide, so-called chemically. I think there's a slight refinement there. Actually, what happens is that the literal energetic pattern of that thought inserts itself into the cell. And now you're living with what they call the chemistry of your thoughts. And until you start to forgive those things, then that will tend to be the state that produces the ongoing process of our words, our thoughts, our feelings about each other, and human life is gone. As you start to shift and change your language, you know, we've been taught a language of, you know, enemies and war and it's their fault and all of that garbage language. And I say garbage relative to the truth about who we are as human beings. You know, you look at the people who are on different sides of a war and you'll notice that they always have degrading words to speak about each other. Because the only way you can look at another human being and believe that they are the enemy is by having words that degrade them in your mind so that they're something less than the human that you are. Now, of course, everybody says, yes, but look at those terrible people. They really are trying to attack us. And you know what? You're right. They are. And you know what? When you go over to their side of the fence, you hear them having the degrading words for people on this side of the fence, and they're saying, look, those people really are trying to attack us. And yeah, you know what? They are. So now we have the justification for war. What if we removed all degrading words? What if we stopped all of the words that degrade ourselves, our relationships, our body parts, our natural functions? What if we removed all of the degrading words for each other and only spoke words, only had anti-inhibitors for acknowledging each other as human beings, as the presence of love? What if we only had words for when somebody is in pain or trauma, the state of releasing those energies of pain and trauma and moving back to the natural state of the presence of love? What if we created anti-inhibitors, words based in love, for beings that are made of the stuff called love? What would happen? They would come back to a full-blown physiological experience of the presence of love. And so that's one of the reasons why we're here, to speak those words over and over and over again. That's one of the reasons, you know, when you asked about that Bible for translation and why we carry it, it has a powerful, powerful, high-level words and thoughts that help to create anti-inhibitors that release once again for those who've had their experience of themselves as the presence of love inhibited by the world, by the insanity of the world. Introducing those words create the anti-inhibitors that allow the brain cells to fire for the remembering of who I really am. Oh, that's right. I'm the presence of love. Oh, that's right. I'm designed to function, plug into the presence of love. That's my natural state, 24/7, 365. If they're the only words I have, guess what your experience is going to be? But as long as the natural word that comes to your mind is, you know, one of those curse words of the culture, one of those degrading thoughts about yourself, one of those degrading thoughts about your parents, your spouse, your neighbor, your enemy. Yeah, degrading thoughts about your enemy create anti-inhibitors for you for degrading thoughts to be active in you. And so the power of life and death, literally, and we're talking now on a cellular chemical level. This isn't theology. This isn't theory. This comes out of the laboratory, and it was understood 2,000 years ago in the Aramaic that the power of life and death is in your words, because your words represent the frequencies that become literally nested within your cellular structure. Remember, we've quoted so many times Max Planck, as he's receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics, says, as a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world, he says. Now, this is a physicist out of the laboratory. Our entire world is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. Guess what's designed to be the predominant resonant energy nested in your field? Your human life. Now, if you have an instrument, I started out talking about, you know, the radio, and we could have a $10 transistor, we could have a $100,000 sound system. Neither one of those wrote Mozart, but each one of them is an expression. Now, I listen to the $10 transistor radio, and I get to hear Mozart, kind of. You know, Mozart, you know, there's his tune, there it is. But do I hear the oboe? Do I hear the cello? Do I hear that subtle background voice that's there? Do I hear that tiny little frequency of the strings that accompany this cello as it plays this beautiful melody? No, on a $10 transistor radio, I don't hear it. But if I turn on the $100,000 stereo system and listen to the same signal, you are the signal, love, that's designed to run your physiology. The world doesn't want it to be that way. The world wants to run your physiology, so it comes in with all these coarse, gross noise energies that tend to run most people's lives, and they never get back to the truth and the subtlety of who they are. You can write your symphony. The world doesn't want you to write your symphony. It's been writing its symphony on you since day one, and it's been going on for 1,000 generations. Kings don't want you to write your own symphony. They want to control and write it for you so that you will make a great slave. And the hostility and fear is how you stay enslaved. And as long as you're in hostility or fear, believe me, you are a slave. You may say, oh, no, I'm a tough guy, and boy, anybody gets in my way, I just punch them out. And that's exactly what kings want you to do. That's how you create killers. That's how you get people to go steal other people's property for you when you're a king. And that's the game that's running the world. You want to upgrade your device? If your life is kind of in hostility, fear, grief, rage, and pain all the time, you know, it's kind of like you're running like a $10 transistor radio. Well, it's kind of like life, but, man, it's tough to go. And then you decide, okay, I'm ready to do the work it takes to refine my instrument and to make it into a $100,000 stereo system. Guess what you're going to have to face? You're going to have to face everything in the device, because the device not only expresses but stores from generation to generation to generation the thoughts, the feelings, the words, the realities of each generation are literally stored. And the energies that are off target, you know, in the Aramaic language, the word sin is an archery term. When you fired at the target and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin. It just means you're off the mark. And if there are generations and generations and generations of energies that are off the mark in your physiology, your work, should you choose to do it, and few want to face it, few have the guts and the courage to go in and face it, but should you choose to, then you're going to start to open. You're going to create anti-inhibitors for all the hostility, the fear, the grief, the rage, and the pain, not only of your life, not only of your parents' lives, not only of their parents, but also their parents and theirs before them. That's what's stored in physiology. One of the reasons why this process of healing isn't very popular is because you've got to face what's in your instrument. You are not the instrument. You are the being designed to express through the instrument. But if the instrument is full of generations and generations of insanity, and the root of that word generation, genari, it means cause. If all of those causes are in there, what you're going to do is you're going to open those things up, and you're going to have to train yourself to be strong enough in your state of being that when those generational patterns surface, instead of being lost in those frequencies of the generations, instead of being lost in the pain and the trauma and the guilt and the grief and the fear and the terror, that you stay centered and focused in who you be as a human being, and you begin the dissolution, the forgiveness of everything that never belonged in a human instrument. It's a huge piece of work. Everybody's called to do that piece of work. Everybody on the planet is called. How did that old scriptural statement go? Many are called, but few are frozen. Or no, it was many are called, but few are chosen. It's really everybody's called. Few choose to do the work, to look into what needs to be dealt with. Now, if you remember that story, and I refer to it often because it's so graphic about who we are and how we can function. But you listen to that story about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years, and you ask yourself the question, how do you get lost in a 30-square-mile area for 40 years? Were they really talking about a physical, hot, sandy place? No. The desert is a code word for these unconscious dynamics that are generational. And if you read that passage, you'll find that what it says, in order to get out of the desert, what had to happen is the old generation had to die off. That didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. It meant that all of the causes, all of the generational frequencies, words, thoughts, feelings, and realities of hostility, fear, pain, grief, and trauma had to be removed. It is a huge piece of work to do. And we really acknowledge everybody who's willing to step in and do it. Of course, when you recognize that in the ancient scriptures, that's what they were talking about us doing, you can certainly understand why that would be buried, and we go out and we make up some kind of another story that just totally hides away the having to do your work, and let's make up a magical formula that makes it easy for people to move into this state of being. Well, folks, there's no magical formula except you put one foot in front of the other and you do your work. And that's why we're here 5 days a week, to have a personal conversation to support you being able to key in. And, you know, I look back over the years of working with people and with my own life and look at some of the terrors and traumas that have had to be faced, the deep, gut-wrenching pain that people carry around inside them, but that pain is inhibited. It's hidden. And the Aramaic language is the only language on the planet that I know of that has built into the structure of the language a particular signal that says this is something that is inhibited, something that is unconscious in you, that is running your perception and your behavior. If you have a hostile thought about someone, you are in a state where something in your unconscious, because all hostility comes from internal content, is creating a perception and behavior that runs you in a way that you're not human, that the presence of love doesn't show up. And the work that it takes to undo that insanity and be restored to human life is monumental. You've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. that's why we're having this conversation right now. We want to support you in having the eyes to see and the ears to hear what it takes to be able to do your work. You know, it's taken me 45 years of working with the, well, actually about 30 years specifically with the Aramaic, and the 15 years before that working in that direction, to come to the point where I could understand what this process was about. And our goal in doing this is to transfer the understanding, to give you the words to liberate the frequencies in you that are unlike love, and the words to activate the frequencies in you that are designed to come from your true human beingness, so that you experience being plugged in directly to the active presence of love 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That's where you're designed to live. And all you have to do is face your generations to do it. The old generation has to die off. Every frequency, every thought, every feeling, every pain, every trauma needs to have a space open in you to flow from you, to be forgiven. And forgiveness has to do with going inside and removing those things, not letting other people off the hook, because those things are in you and have been activated in you. And everybody that can show up and activate one of those frequencies in you, if you can stop and breathe and do your work in that moment, is your gift, because they're showing you exactly what it is in you that needs to be forgiven. And we're here to create a space of support for doing that work. So that, in a nutshell, is what 2014 is going to be about. We're going to take it to the next level. Our project in Costa Rica, you'll be hearing more in the next couple of weeks as things unfold. We're looking at, it'll actually be the first time in all the years of doing this work that we've done a fundraiser, a systematic fundraiser to create a space for the work to move to the next level. We're going to be doing that, studying and working on how to put that together at this moment. In the past, all of this work has always been done just on our own hook, basically, whatever came from the travel that we did. You know, I don't know if you know this, but when we travel, our workshops are free, and we pay our own expenses. And the reason we do that is because we're committed to giving it away, whether people have money or not. And so we're going to be creating, and we invite you to consider whether or not you might choose to participate in supporting a space that we're working toward acquiring in Costa Rica to take this work to a quantum step forward. And so that's kind of where we're going with things in the new year, and we're certainly holding the space for this new year to be the best one yet in the delivering of the message of forgiveness to the planet, and the best one yet for each of our eternal lives. And gee, is there anything happening in the chat room for us to be aware of? Any questions or thought, anything that we've just shared?
We only have a couple of minutes, but the conversation is about kind of like about peeling off those layers, and when you go to one level and you think you're done, that the next level comes around, and the comment was made, but there's so much crap in there to deal with, and I was just typing, yeah, but crap is already there. And we can either face it and work through it, or it's going to kick us every day saying, hey, I'm in here, you need to clean me out. So we're going to face it either way, whether it's willingly or unwillingly, right?
For sure, yeah. The unwilling die of horrible diseases, because every frequency that doesn't belong to the cell begins the degradation of the cell. And people think, well, if I just keep it locked in there, I don't ever have to deal with it. Oh, yeah, you will deal with it. There's no such thing as not dealing with it. You remember in Romans where they understood this, they said, nothing will remain hidden, everything will be made known in the light of day. These are the things that cancers and death are made of. And when we're willing to face them and acquire the skills that it takes to move through them, then we can start to change those dynamics in our bodies, in our emotions, in our relationships, and in our lives, and that's what we're here to support you in, and we appreciate you being here, and we hold the space that your new year is the best one yet of your eternal life, and that your celebrations are happy, holy, and safe. Blessings, and thanks for joining us. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.